Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 10th of November, 2011, and what a show have we got for you today. We will be speaking with the Federal Minister for Mental Health and Ageing. The Honourable Mark Butler will be joining us here in the studios of Joy 94.9. We will also talk to Australian Marriage Equality Sydney convener Alex Greenwich and Supermum and National Spokesperson for PFLAG, Shelley Argent. They'll be both joining us to bring us up to date as to what they've been up to with regards to marriage equality on the national scale. It's only 3 weeks out from the ALP convention. A lot of work still to be done, and it seems like our Prime Minister is the only one left. But anyway, we will talk to them. We'll see what they've been up to. And they've got a great forum for Melbourne people interested in what they've been up to. That's coming up. We'll tell you all the details a little later. We'll also be speaking to Sam Minter. He is the president of the Melbourne Chargers Rugby Club. And he will also be quite interested, I'm sure, in the conversation that we have with the Minister for Mental Health, because we touch on sport, of all things. So all of that and lots more coming up today on The Line. Of course, the show is nothing without you, and we want your feedback on all of the things that we're up to today. We would love to get your thoughts on what the Honourable Mark Butler has to say, and of course your thoughts on marriage equality. This is how you join the show.
Call Joy.
1300 Joy 949.
SMS
0427 Joy 949. Email
onair@joy.org.au. Our first guest today is a man who at just 41 years of age is in his second federal parliamentary term in the House of Representatives as the elected member for Port Adelaide in South Australia. In 2009, he was appointed the Parliamentary Secretary for Health. And following the 2010 federal election, he was promoted to the front bench as the Minister for Mental Health and Ageing. In September of this year, Prime Minister Julia Gillard added to his duties as her Minister assisting mental health reform. He's a married man, a qualified lawyer, who's spent more than 15 years in the trenches as a union official, and the last 11 years on the ALP's national executive. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the studios of Joy 94.9, the Honourable Mark Butler. Welcome, Minister.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
Very well, thank you. You have a pedigree in politics like no one else, with both your grandfather and great-grandfather being former premiers of South Australia.
Yes, on the wrong side of politics. It took a while for the family to find the right side, but they did eventually.
Are you the black sheep of the family? Or?
Well, not anymore. I mean, I think if you take a very long historical view of it, I am, but I think I'm probably in the majority of my family in these generations.
I would imagine that gave you a good grounding for community service, though.
It might be in the blood, but I mean, there certainly were some generations between ours who didn't serve in politics and didn't take that much of an interest in politics. My mother did, although she's not from the same side of the family as the Tory premiers, but I don't know, there must be something there.
Just yesterday, you came out publicly for the first time stating your support for same-sex marriage. It is something that has been very much in the zeitgeist since before the federal election. You've made a couple of points, particularly about how we might be able to tweak it to fit our nation. Give me your thoughts on it, please.
Well, there are currently three views in the Labor Party, I think, in the lead up to National Conference, which is only now a few weeks away. The first view is to change the current Marriage Act to allow same-sex couples to marry. The second view is to oppose that and to retain the current definition of marriage in the Marriage Act, which is that it's a union between a man and a woman. And there's a middle ground view that you might have seen some people come out with some time ago now, that there should be simply a conscience vote on this so that members of the party would be free to vote according to their conscience rather than bound to a particular policy either way. The view I've put in the Sydney Morning Herald this week is against a conscience vote. I've expressed the view, which I strongly hold, that conscience vote should be and historically has been restricted to issues of life and death. Other issues where the Labor Party has led the fight to get rid of discrimination based on sexual preference have not in modern times been the subject of a conscience vote, and I take the view that neither should this.
Indeed, and you use the New York model as a way through. If carried, you suggest that it would enable basically all parties to be off the hook.
Well, I think the debate has skated over the fact that there are essentially two systems of marriage now in Australia, a religious system of marriage where ceremonies are conducted in churches and synagogues and such like. It's in significant decline as market share. I mean, in 88, they had about 60% of marriages were conducted by a religious celebrant. Now that's down to almost 30%. And in some states, like WA and Queensland, it's below 30%. So the vast majority of marriages today are conducted as civil ceremonies. And I say that from the perspective of civil marriage, at least, that we should be applying the civil standards of equal treatment, regardless of sexual preference. I do say, though, and they said in New York when they passed their laws a few months ago, that if churches or other religious organisations choose to continue to take the view that marriages conducted in their church or their synagogue or their mosque should be heterosexual marriages, well, they should continue to be able to do that and be provided with some legal protection to do that. And that should really satisfy all views about this.
You've come out publicly in support of same-sex marriage. One of your good mates, Penny Wong, is on the same side of the fence. Anthony Albanese is too. There are reports Nicola Roxon might take a similar view. It kind of leaves one person standing on her own. Where does that leave us post the conference?
Well, I think it remains to be seen largely what National Conference delegates, which include the Prime Minister down, what view they will take at the conference. As I said, there are three views floating around, and there probably are some different permutations you can take about the conscience vote as well. There are probably two different ways in which you can do that. So I think it does remain to be seen quite what view a number of particularly senior members of the party take, and that debate will unfold over the next few weeks and then obviously at the National Conference itself in Sydney.
Bringing your portfolios into the focus, you don't have to go back too far to realise that the only money the GLBTI sector ever received was directly targeted at HIV. In more recent times, it seems that we've realised that health outcomes for the community are a result of a lot of other things, and it includes mental health. Since Beyond Blue picked up the mantle for mental health over 10 years or so ago, hundreds of millions of dollars have been channeled into mental health, trying to better that sector. It is those reasons, I guess, why in part you're here today, because the mental health outcomes for our community will determine our societal outcomes for everybody. You've allocated $1.1 million recently for the Gay and Lesbian Health Alliance. Thank you very much. But when are we going to see some concrete outcomes insofar as focused campaigns to counter homophobia, deliver better health, mental health outcomes for youth suicide, etc.? Those sorts of things I know are incremental, but we seem to have had research study after research study.
Look, mental health, you're right, over the last 10 years has really come of age Well, in terms of being recognised as the very major health challenge that it is for the community. And I think particularly last year, through Pat McGorry's tenure as Australian of the Year, It went from being a second or third order political issue, which it has been for my life, to being a first order political issue, where the Prime Minister and the alternative Prime Minister last year actually debated mental health in the federal election campaign. Now, that's never happened.
Yeah.
And as a result, largely of that public focus on mental health, we included mental health really as the centrepiece of this year's budget. So we've come an extraordinary distance over the last 10 years. But I think we've indicated, and people like leaders like Pat McGorry and many others have indicated, we're still a long way from where we should be as a country in terms of good mental health services. Largely, this is the product generally, and I'll come to your question specifically, largely it's the product generally of literally decades of underinvestment in mental health. As we went through the processes of deinstitutionalisation, moving people out of very, very long-term accommodation for decades, often in psychiatric hospitals, we didn't, as a country, follow through with the community supports that were supposed to be the quid pro quo. Mm. And as a result, people really have been left on their own, often in situations of homelessness, long, long-term unemployment, representing at emergency departments, vast social exclusion. And it's going to take some years to get us in a position to remedy that situation. What we also recognised, I think, though, last year was that there are particular cohorts in the population who are more vulnerable than the average to poor mental health outcomes, particularly more vulnerable than the average to suicidality, suicide attempts and completed suicides. And we particularly focused on the LGBTI population and the Indigenous population last year, and targeted some particular funding towards community-led initiatives aimed at suicide prevention in those populations. And the $1.1 million that you mentioned as channeling to the LGBTI Health Alliance is largely a start for that investment to start to flow. I'm very excited about the Alliance's project there. It's really about capacity building, and I think that's the first challenge we have. The level of understanding broadly in the mental health sector by mental health professionals and by other workers who are really at the front line dealing with people who might be at risk of suicide, who might be experiencing very poor mental health, training them to recognise the particular issues associated with their sexuality, I think, is the first thing we need to do, the capacity building work that the Alliance wants to do. So I'm very excited about the project, but it certainly doesn't mean that there's not more we need to do in the future.
Now, you brought up Indigenous mental health there, and I'd like to make a comparison, if I may, between the tremendous work that the AFL did in regards to countering racism through various campaigns and embracing the Indigenous players. I have a particular gripe with the AFL that they have publicly said that they will counter homophobia and that they won't tolerate it, and yet nothing has been done. Sadly, in the US, for example, the Basketball League had a situation where players came out with homophobic statements, and then they had to be on the front foot and bring out national campaigns to counter homophobia. Is there any chance that you, as Mental Health Minister, might be able to work with the other Mark, Minister for Sport, to see if we can get something that can be so transformative that the AFL did such great work in the racism issue? Perhaps they could do similar work in the homophobia issue.
I'm more than happy to have a talk with Mark about that. I think Mark and Kate Ellis, in that position before Mark, both recognised the incredible community leadership role that codes like AFL and the NRL in the northern states — I'm from an AFL community myself — but netball and a range of other sporting codes in this country, the extraordinary community leadership role they play, and the role model positions that they hold, particularly for young people, not only for young people, but particularly for young people. So I think there are some great examples of them getting their own shop in order, and at the same time, I think, conveying a very important anti-racism message and such like around the country. And I think it would be an important discussion for me to have with Mark about other ways in which...
I'm going to put a big tick next to that one.
That's right.
Good stuff. Thank you. Now, Minister, you had a meeting only 3 or 4 weeks ago with members of our community to specifically talk about aged care issues. Give us a bit of background on that and how it went, and what are the outcomes for aged care? Because it's going to be, whether we like it or not, it's going to be an ever-increasing issue for us all.
It is. We're at a profound moment in our history, I think. And if we weren't talking about climate change, I think we'd be talking about ageing as the really big transformative agenda for our country. The first of the baby boomers turned 65 this year. And from here on in, for some decades, our older population, the over 65s, grows dramatically from about 3 million to 9 million by 2050. The number of people over 85 grows even faster, more than quadruples. So there are some wonderful things associated with that, some great opportunities for people to give good lives in retirement.
And some frightening ones,
but some challenges. Some challenges in terms of making sure that we have the support systems in place to ensure that the 25 years we've added to life expectancy over the last century or so are good years. They're years in which people remain healthy and active and connected to their communities. And aged care is a part of that. So we asked the Productivity Commission to conduct a very comprehensive inquiry last year, which they did. They handed down a draft report in January, which I think a number of parts of the community thought didn't deal with some particular issues of diversity sufficiently. And so there was a bit of a full court press, to use another sporting analogy, between the draft and the final report. And I think the final report did come through with some much better discussion and potential ways forward around diversity, including sexual diversity. We've recognised, and I've had a lot of local advocacy in my own part of the country in Port Adelaide by people like Joe Harrison and other sort of well-known advocates in this area, that talk about some particular issues associated with the current group of LGBTI elders who have often grown up or tend to have grown up in a situation where their sexuality was not only subject to stigma and discrimination, it was often also subject to criminal law sanction. So this is a group that can be tentative in dealing with institutions, tentative in dealing openly with health professionals and such like.
And fearful in their frailty, I would imagine.
That's right, fearful in their frailty and concerned that some organisations that provide aged care services might not be particularly sensitive about their sexuality.
A lot of them are religious-based, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah. So these are issues the Commission picked up. I think the Commission took the view that the aged care sector was not well positioned to deal with the needs of LGBTI elders, and we really needed almost to start from scratch and build from the ground up a bit of a strategy to better equip it. We've done a bit of work in this respect. Tanya Plibersek, the Minister for Human Services, she provided ACON with some funding recently to do some training work for aged care workers in New South Wales around LGBTI elder issues. That's been a really important project. We saw for the first time in 2009-10 some community aged care places provided to an organisation in Queensland specifically for LGBTI elders. So there is some movement at the station, but we thought it was important, talking to the Alliance and talking to some other people in the community, that we actually have a round table, spend a couple of days talking through some of these issues and get some ideas for a way forward. I don't think the round table solved everything. I think there was an indication and understanding at that meeting that we needed to do some further discussion, but I'm very committed to making sure that as we develop a response to the Productivity Commission report, the idea promoted by the Productivity Commission that we have a particular focus on the needs of LGBTI elders be a very important part of that response.
One of the most tangible things that could be done immediately is to change the language on assessment forms. And aged care assessment teams use these forms when assessing someone to be placed into an aged care facility. When can we see that that change, do you think?
Well, the round table very helpfully narrowed what was a very broad discussion into six areas of concrete proposal, I guess, and there were some really tangible practical proposals dealing with the ACAP forms and things like that, which we're going to take away and have a look at. I mean, the ACAP process is currently delivered by state government, so it's not something entirely within my control or the Commonwealth government's control. But I think these practical suggestions are good things to put alongside some more ambitious proposals to change the culture in aged care a bit, to change the way in which aged care workers are trained, to make sure that they are sensitive to and conscious of the diverse needs of our older population, whether it's sexual diversity or cultural diversity, linguistic diversity, indigeneity. You know, we're a very diverse population and our aged care system should reflect that.
One of those grandiose ideas, perhaps, is to include some sort of reference on all government forms that would identify one's sexuality. This would solve a lot of the duplication of research and that sort of stuff if we could have some of the basic governmental forms where one could self-identify as being gay And statistically, that would help everybody, surely. Any chance of that?
Well, look, I think this is something that was raised as well, particularly by Corey. I think he's got a particular passion about data linkage.
Our new general manager.
Our new general manager at this round table. And I think there are some opportunities with ICT now for us to do things we've never even thought of through data linkage, which is not easy. There are some privacy issues that need to be worked through, but I think they're surmountable. And there also are some issues about systems talking to each other, which government's not great at. So so it rolls off the tongue easily, data linkage. Sure. But I think over time you will see government, state and Commonwealth, really starting to share data in a way that gives us a much better understanding about what's happening in our community. I've talked to people in Western Australia, for example, who are doing this in the health area. Fiona Stanley is a real champion of this work and what it does to allow us to better understand the needs of Indigenous Australians in that state. So there are some great examples around, and I think we need, as a collection of governments, state or federal, to look at ways in which we can better share our data to better understand what's happening out in the community.
Now, one of the best parts of your job, surely, is the ability to give out funds. And recently, you handed out more money than ever before to medical research. And that not only is going to benefit the entire community, but there are specific outcomes for our community as well, particularly in the HIV sector. So thank you for that. It must be a delight for you to be able to do that sort of thing.
It is. Although it's not in my title, health and medical research is part of my portfolio, and it's a part of my portfolio I'm particularly passionate about, as I am with other areas, because I think it's such an important part of a good response to mental health needs and a good response to ageing. But
it's also got to be an important part of our sort of GDP, surely.
Absolutely. We have, you know, the NHMRC, the Health Medical Research Council, was founded 75 years ago. It's a very ambitious thing for the country to do in the 1930s. And when it was announced, we made very clear that we wanted to punch above our weight as researchers compared to the rest of the world, and we have.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't long after that Howard Florey discovered penicillin. The work done here in Melbourne in the post-war period around immunology really transformed our understanding of infectious disease, and in many ways provided a foundation for a response to the HIV epidemic in the 80s and 90s. So we've got a lot to be proud of here. Here in Melbourne, where we are today, 42% of our medical research as a nation is conducted in Victoria. It's a very long history of punching above the national weight, and the nation punches above the global weight.
South Australia did all right recently too, I noticed.
South Australia did about as good as its population share, but Victoria does very, very well in this respect. And there are some incredibly exciting frontiers we can see ahead of us, largely because of ICT changes over the last 10 or 20 years, but also because of the mapping of the human genome 10 years ago. This has transformed our capacity to understand how diseases we thought 10 or 15 years ago might be utterly incurable work and ways in which we might counter them.
Minister, one of the sadder things of your job must be to identify the mental health issues with regards to those that are incarcerated in our detention centres. And it seems that we are getting more and more reports of the tragic mental health outcomes of these people. What can we do?
Well, people are particularly who arrive by boat and seek asylum in Australia tend to come from very difficult circumstances, and the trip to Australia via transit countries is also a very difficult and traumatic trip. So
locking them up for 3 years doesn't help either.
So we're very conscious of the likelihood that they're experiencing mental health difficulties as soon as they arrive. Mm-hmm. These issues are managed by the Department of Immigration. They seek advice from time to time from the Department of Health, and they have some expert advisory groups with some key leaders in the mental health field in Australia advising them on an ongoing basis. But there are initial checks made of people's mental health and quite significant mental health supports in place in detention centres, as well as for people who are moved into community detention, which, as you'd know, is something we're trying to do more and more. And Minister Bowen has been able to do quite a deal over the last 12 months or so. So, look, this is a very, very big challenge. It's a big challenge within an area that is an extraordinary policy and political challenge for our country, I think. But, you know, I think we provide very good mental health supports for people while in detention. We also have a very sophisticated program of support for people once they move into the community and after they become permanent residents and citizens as well, particularly if they've been subjected to torture and trauma through our torture and trauma support service, which has been running now for many years here in Australia, and I think is seen as a world leader in this area. So I don't think anyone in the government underestimates this challenge. I know Minister Bowen, with whom I talk about these issues quite regularly, recognises that as a very significant challenge in a very challenging portfolio.
You've been recently identified as one of the top 10 political fixers in our nation. And from all reports and all the research that I have done, you've been universally tabled as the nice guy in politics, and I can see why. Mark Butler, thank you very much for joining us today on Joy 94.9.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be with you.
That's the Honourable Mark Butler, Federal Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, joining us there on Joy 94.9. I'd love to know your thoughts. Tell me what you think as to his feedback regarding, you know, things like the sports campaign. It was nice for him to commit to having a chat to the Federal Minister for Sport. It would also be nice if we could do a little bit more to help those incarcerated in our detention centres. Coming up next, we'll be speaking with Sam Mentor, President of Melbourne Chargers. But I want to know your thoughts. This is how you let me know.
Call Joy, 1300-JOY-949.
SMS
0427-JOY-949. Email onair@joy.org.au.
Broadcasting throughout Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming live around the world at joy.org.au. You are on the line with Dean Beck, and we're joined by President of Melbourne Chargers, Sam Mentor. Welcome.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks for having me on.
An absolute pleasure. Good to have you back. Congratulations on being re-elected president at the recent AGM.
Thanks very much, Dean. Cheers.
Now, you've got a number of things coming up, but before we get to that, I just want to get your thoughts on homophobia in sport. In elite sports, in this country at least.
Sure, sure. It was interesting to hear Mark talking about AFL and the sort of response in AFL and maybe the lack of response to homophobia in the sport. I mean, I'm reminded of how probably far ahead union is in that respect.
Rugby union?
Yeah, exactly right, rugby union. Yeah. That there are already out rugby union players in play at the very top level.
Talking about Gareth Thomas. And that's filtered all the way down, hasn't it?
And it has. Yeah. That there's one Premier Division English player who's recently come out quite publicly. And there are gay people playing all throughout the ranks in rugby union, even down to suburban level, which is where the Chargers and the Sydney Convicts operate, and a whole bunch of clubs in the States and in the UK.
Well, I hope before I die we see an AFL suburban gay rugby team. I reckon that'd be pretty cool. Now, Sam, you've got a couple of things coming up. Let's start with the Rugby 101, because this is all sort of not only in the lead-up to your season next year, but bigger things next year as well.
That's right. We're all gearing up to get to the Bingham Cup next year in Manchester in June. So we're well on the way to planning that. We're taking a squad of 25 players over and a support crew of probably about 10 or 12. And the recruitment for
and
that...
And whoever else wants to come along.
And whoever wants to come and support, yeah. They're more than welcome to.
Sure.
We're hoping to take as many people over to support as we possibly can.
I cannot think of anything more foreign than myself being
than
on...
putting on some boots.
On a rugby field.
Sure.
However, that doesn't mean I don't have a soft spot for the Melbourne Chargers, and it doesn't mean that people like me can't help out either.
Well, I mean, one of the characteristics of the Chargers, and it's probably peculiar to Victoria, and well, in the States as well, is we don't have a lot of homegrown rugby players here. So the Chargers' genesis is really completely new to the sport players. So in 2009, we started with six people, most of whom had never played league or union before. And the Rugby 101 is sort of generated around that idea of taking people who don't actually know anything about the sport, who are bringing nothing to rugby union apart from a willingness to get their hands dirty.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, each year that this, you've been doing this sort of thing in Sydney as well as here in Melbourne, how many people actually turn up to Rugby 101 to just give it a go, to just see what happens, and then how many people do you get that stay on after that?
Sure, in 2009 we had I think there was 10 people at Albert Park. Last year we had I think about 22-23 completely new faces at Rugby
Union. We want 40
new
people
awesome.
There this year.
and we've got about 8 or 9 of those
playing
this year. And they've got, you know, promising rugby futures ahead of them now.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. Now, you've also got the 2012 Christmas, the best Christmas gift for 2012, and that is the Chargers calendar.
It is.
It's bloody hot too, just quite.
It's actually been done quite well. Yeah, it's a really good calendar.
How do we get our hands on one of those?
Okay, they're on sale through our website, which is also incidentally where people can sign up for Rugby 101. Yeah, through the website, through www.melbournechargers.org. Also, they're on sale at the Laird and at Manhouse.
And, of course, Bingham Cup is in June next year.
Yeah, correct.
101 will hopefully mean you get at least 2 or 3 star players that you might take along with you. What else do you have to do before then? Raise money, I guess.
Yeah, the idea in holding Rugby 101 so early into the season, and we don't start pre-season training until January, is so that if we pick up guys who are interested in coming along, so they've got time to plan around, you know, saving money to get to Manchester.
And of course, the team needs money as well. So the calendar would help go towards that.
Yeah, it will certainly.
Plus other events that you hold throughout Melbourne.
Yeah, we've got a full fundraising calendar. There's more on that about the website. I won't go into too much detail, but we've got a pretty full fundraising calendar between here and Manchester.
Give us the website one more time.
Melbournechargers.org.
Thank you very much, Sam Minter, President of Melbourne Chargers. Great to see you again.
Thanks, Dean. Cheers.
And very big thank you to Lindsay, who thoroughly enjoyed the interview with Mark Butler. And then there was this one that says, Joy should have a show like this on television, on a public broadcaster. Hey, I like that one. Thank you very much for that. This is how you get in contact with us. I'd love to hear from you.
Call Joy.
1300 Joy 949. SMS 0427 Joy 949. Email on air at joy.org.au.
You want a mic?
Now, there's only a couple of weeks to go till the Federal ALP Conference, the National Conference of the ALP, where it'll be decided just what happens with same-sex marriage. Well, there are a couple of people that have been working very hard on this. One of them is the Sydney convener of Australian Marriage Equality. His name is Alex Greenwich. He joins us on the line. Alex, welcome.
Welcome, Dean. Thanks.
And supermum extraordinaire and national spokesperson for PFLAG, Shelley Argent, who joins us on the line. Shelley, welcome.
Hi, Dean. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Shelley.
Now, you two have been flat out on this. I cannot begin to imagine how much it's cost you both, but I would like to have an update as to where it's at. Shelley, let's start with you. You've been up and down to Canberra like nobody's business.
Oh, yes. Look, I'm actually living out of a suitcase at the moment, Dean. I'm sure of it. But now what I've been doing for the last year is I've been taking parents with me to Canberra, and we've been walking the halls and speaking to all the MPs and senators and ministers and such things. And what we do is we say we don't expect to change their mind, but we want to give them something to think about if a conscience vote should arise. But the point is, a conscience vote is good, and if that's all we can get, that's okay. But realistically, what we're wanting is a party policy on this issue, because then we feel that we'll have more hope of it being passed through with the legislation.
Alex, could you explain the difference for us, please?
Well, I guess that the difference is quite simple.
And why does it matter?
Well, the key thing is, probably the reason why both Shelley and I would support a change in Labor Party policy versus a conscience vote is change in policy gets this done faster. It delivers marriage equality to gay and lesbian Australians faster. A conscience vote will take longer and is not guaranteed the level of success that a binding ALP policy would. It's also, a great opportunity for the Labor Party to send a clear message that they have returned to their core values of fairness and equality.
Alex, this question has come through for you, and it's from Pamela in South Yarra. Pamela says, why does a smooth operator like you still need to lobby the sheltered members of our political class in this day and age?
I guess, you know, this is all about starting a conversation, and it's with these politicians. It's all about, as Shelley said, giving them something to think about, helping them open their mind, and it's working. This is no longer seen as a controversial issue by a lot of MPs. I was talking last night on this about how it wasn't long ago we couldn't meet with a Liberal without them saying, you know, get out of my office, this is a Greens issue. Now they all happily tell us about their gay friends and family. They'll talk about their favourite Will and Grace episode. the method that Shelley and I have been using about having the conversation, about informing, about letting these MPs know that we're not threatening anything, has been working.
Shelley, Alex just made reference to it then, but your methodology has been, I would say, politics 101. It's charm the pants off them, be firm, and attack them head on with a language that is non-confrontational.
And that's right, and it is. It's about the non-confrontation, because if you go in there ready to confront, you just absolutely lost it right at the beginning, so don't waste your time.
Yeah.
But what we do is we go in, we just talk to them, and it is. It's just a matter of talking to them, seeing where their sticking point is about what their concern is, and then just talking them through that and getting them through it. And the thing is, we need to be, like, non-threatening about this, because the calmer you can be, then the more logic is in the conversation, and you have more luck.
It's you use your own guerrilla tactics, though. Like, you're quite happy to take them to lunch and make sure that they're wined and dined, and then you're also quite happy to tug on the heartstrings.
And that's right, absolutely. And why not? Because to us, and it's not just tugging on the heartstrings. I mean, this is a personal issue. I mean, to me as a parent, it's a personal issue, because I want my son to have his rights. For Alex and the rest of the gay community, it's a personal issue, because you all want your rights for yourself, and that's what it is. And so that's where it comes with the heartstrings. And again, it's a case of, I mean, I don't really believe in saying, you know, what if this was your son, because I don't think that necessarily works, because that's a little scary to some of them.
And a bit removed as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've had... And sometimes some of the worst and the most homophobic MPs are the ones that do have lesbian daughters and gay sons. So that is not a no-brainer when you say that. You're just not necessarily going to get anywhere. So again, it's just a case of talking to them, pointing out the fact that, you know, MPs don't lose their seats just because they vote for something that is right. And I always point out very often that the constituents' memories are short, you know, because they then move on to other things. I mean, I also use, like in Queensland, when we had the surrogacy legislation, you know, we had all the good Christians and the family groups up in arms. But as soon as they lost, they packed up their placards and went home, and we haven't heard from them since. And I believe that's what would be the same again with marriage equality. Everyone, all the naysayers will kick and scream, but as soon as it comes through and they see that the sky hasn't fallen in, it'll become a non-issue.
Alex, I mentioned cost earlier. Has this come at a cost to you personally, either financially or with regards to your relationship?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and it's something that, you know, Shelley and I sometimes might talk about over a glass of wine after a long day of lobbying. I think the times when it hits you, it hit me once recently. I was flying back from Canberra to Sydney after a day of probably 12 meetings, having my glass of bad red wine on the plane and thinking to myself, I've had to spend the whole day talking to MPs asking for permission to marry the person I love in the country that I love. And it hit me there that the potential personal cost that this can face. However, like Shelley, we are constantly encouraged by the support that we get from the community. This is a really strong message of hope that we're sending to the gay and lesbian community, and they certainly tell us that, and they reflect that to us. You know, I remember sitting with Shelley down in a restaurant in Parliament House. And we had two young gay staffers come up to us and thank us for all that we're doing. So I guess that, you know, this can be stressful. It can be draining, but it is certainly extremely rewarding to be delivering this message of hope.
Shelley, the cost to you, you couldn't do this, I would imagine, without a couple of things, not just the support and love of your family, but, you know, your husband has been very wonderful in his contribution to this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I must say that, I mean, I've really lost track of how much money I would have personally put into this issue. But again, I think it's one of those things where you have to put your money where your mouth is, and you have to stand up for what you believe is right, or what I believe is right. That's what I do. And again, it's not the money. It's more, you know, what that money can do for me. And if I didn't have my hubby's or our finances to help me, I wouldn't be able to achieve a tenth of what I have, because it's an expensive exercise going to Canberra, you know, every couple of weeks, or flying around the country doing marriage equality workshops and such things, and then there's flights and everything else included. And then there's even just the you know, the literature and things that we produce, because even now, like with the Fringe event coming up, you know, we've got an official Fringe event at the Labor conference, and ours is at the Novotel, and we're going to be starting that from about 6:30 on the Friday night. Well, of course, there's cost involved, but it's very important. And then we've also got a booklet that we've produced called Marriage Equality from a Parent's Perspective, because again, it's like what we want for our children. And I think the delegates need to know that, you know, because again, it's showing another side to the story or the argument or the debate. And so to me, the cost is not relevant in that sense. It's the outcome that's important.
We're speaking with Shelley Argent, the National Spokesperson for PFLAG, and Alex Greenwich, Sydney Convener of Australian Marriage Equality. Alex, Pam has said that your response was excellent, and that we need a more diverse representation of our political makeup that includes GLBTI members like you. That's from Pam in South Yarra. Thank you, Pam. We'd love to hear from you too. SMS 0427569949, or send us an email on air at joy.org.au. Yeah, absolutely. I haven't finished with you yet.
I was just going to say, with Pam's comment,
yes,
that Alex is amazing when he is talking to the MPs and the groups generally. And I just don't know how he just stays so contained and so polite and so nice all the time, but he achieves so much.
I could not agree more.
I have
seen Alex nailed into a corner and be as smooth as silk and
absolutely,
so unruffled. It's extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. That's, I don't know exactly where it comes right from.
No, he's a great ambassador, I can tell you.
Yes, absolutely.
And absolutely so is Shelley. I mean, the work Shelley does, and the way she delivers it, and the grim that she has helped get us to where we are today.
Coming up this coming weekend, you have got a forum. Talk about heavyweights. We've got Rodney Croom, a campaign director for Australian Marriage Equality. Shelley will be in Melbourne. Alex Greenwich will be in Melbourne. And you'll all be joined by Jackie Tomlins and Carl Catter. Now, this is a function being held at DT's Hotel in Church Street in Richmond from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. this coming Sunday, November the 13th. Alex, tell us what is going to be going on at this forum, please.
Well, as you just said, we have the Marriage Equality A team all together. and essentially what we'll be doing is we'll be giving a campaign update, informing people about where we're up to, what everything means. I mean, Shelley and I use a lot of terminology that not a lot of people might understand: party platform, conscience vote, civil unions, all these kind of things. So we'll be sort of giving a lot of information, but we'll also be giving people ideas on how to contribute to their campaign and arming them with actions that they can take to make a positive impact.
Shelley, will this is a two-hour forum. It'll be a, what's the sort of setup? Will it be a table setup and a Q&A sort of format? Or,
well, normally what happens is we all stand and give our perspective of what we've been doing and how we think, you know, it should be done, how people should be approaching the MPs and different things. And then, yes, there is a Q&A at the end. But generally what they are is they're informative. A lot of people come along, and they're also informal. And so people don't need to be intimidated. It's a case of just coming along and asking questions. And again, because sometimes what happens is people just really don't know how to approach the MP. It can be intimidating. And so we try and take that out of the equation for them and just give them tips on how to just approach the MP and talk, and or how to write the letters and what to put in them and such things. So we try and make it as easy as possible.
Alex, we've come so far. Is there a danger that we could get a little complacent before the whole deal is done?
I don't think so. I think that we have to go into this with a fair amount of realism, and we know this is not going to be an easy battle, and it's one that is certainly not over on December 3rd. But I think we're all motivated to keep on going, because as Shelley said, this is something that affects us personally. It affects us every day of our life, and that impetus is not going to go away until the government is able to deliver what a majority of Australians want, and that's marriage equality.
Adam has sent through a text on 0427569949 saying, thank you for all your hard work, Shelley and Alex. So proud and thankful for what you have done for our community.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Shelley, what the hell are you going to do with your life when this is all a done deal?
I'm going to go into obscurity and absolutely enjoy it. Because even today I'm sitting in Sydney. I live at home. I'm in Brisbane, but today I'm in Sydney. I've been did some work with Alex last night, and tomorrow night I've got a presentation at the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Business Network dinner, and then Saturday afternoon I'm off to Melbourne. So.
And I reckon you might have a few more weddings to go to if we do get this signed off on.
I tell you what, I better get a few invites, that's all I
But Shelley should not have to bring presents.
No, totally.
I was thinking that, Alex, but I thought, no, I won't.
And Alex, you know, you must have a life outside of this, although it must be hard to acknowledge that sometimes. What will you do when this is all a done deal?
I think I'm going to cross that bridge when I come to it. I just my mind and my thought process is firmly entrenched in the campaign at the moment. I'm not able to think beyond that. You know, I do run my own recruitment business.
Is that what you actually do?
Yeah, I will obviously keep doing that, and it's something that I do enjoy and passionately enjoy. But after this, you know, I also like to contribute in any way I can to making Australia a more equal and inclusive society for gay and lesbian Australians. So that'll always be part of my life.
Well, this Sunday, the 13th of November, will be the Marriage Forum. And it will be held at DT's Hotel, 164 Church Street, Richmond, 11 a.m. through to 1 p.m. It will feature Carl Catter, Alex Greenwich, Jackie Tomlins, Shelley Argent and Rodney Croom. Shelley Argent and Alex Greenwich, thank you so much for joining us on the line today. Really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Dean. Bye, Alex.
And thank you all for your SMSs and your emails. We'll be back with a little more and to say goodbye after this.
Call Joy.
1300-JOY-949. SMS 0427-JOY-949. Email on air at joy.org.au. You want a man?
And a very big thank you to all of the wonderful messages that have been sent through. Greatly appreciated. This one says... Doug Pollard and Dean Beck are the George Negus and Yarnavent of gay media. I think that is a classic. Thank you so much. Thank you very much for joining me on the line today. A big thank you to the Federal Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, Mark Butler. Thank you to Sam Minter, President of Melbourne Chargers. A big thank you to Shelley Argent and Alex Greenwich for joining us, giving us the update on what they've been up to and where it's at. And I will be with you again tonight from 9 p.m. with Andrew the Apprentice as we explore sex, sexuality and self on Hide and Seek. Till next time, or till I see you tonight, you keep well, take care, bye for now. Bye.
94.9.
Hi, I'm Kylie Minogue, also known as Kylie from Camberwell.
Hey, it's Richard Reed.
Hey, this is Winter Gordon.
Hi, I'm Matt Preston from MasterChef.
What's up, party people? It's the legendary DJ Spinderella.
Hey there, I'm Adam Lambert.
Hello, this is Kate Sobrano.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm Alexandra Burke.
This is Katie Noonan.
Hi, this is Francois Sagat.
Hello, this is Katie Lang.
G'day, I'm Barry Bissell.
Hello, this is Tina Arena.
Hi, this is Paris Wells.
Hi, I'm Cindy Lauper.
Hi, this is Tim Campbell.
Hi, this is Sear.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Morosi.
Hey, I'm Darren Hayes.
Hi, I'm Jade Leonard.
Hi, I'm Shaka Khan.
Hi, this is Kathy Freeman.
Hi, I'm Daniel Kowalski.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station.
Hey, everybody, this is Chris Willis. Put your hands up for Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station.
All night and day long, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.